You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Wildcat Golf Club. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Broadcasting live from Wildcat Golf Club, Joel Blank, Jeremy Branham, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic says that the Astros and Carlos Correa have stayed in communication as Carlos Correa explores other teams in free agency. You buying that the two sides are still chatting?
Yeah, I think so. I think they're still chatting, but I think they're both realistic in what's to come. And I think that when you look at what the market has dictated in terms of whether you go 10 years or not, the AAV, the average salary that Correa is going to command, the amount of years that teams are going to throw at him, as we've covered all of this, the major market teams that have just crazy money to spend and don't care about the after effects of the long term of the deal, I just think he's all but gone. And I think that Crane owes it to the fans, owes it to his own franchise to stay in communication with Correa and say, keep us posted. But I think it's all coming to that inevitable end of, hey, we love you, we loved your time here, and we really wanted you back, but we can't do that. There's just no possible way.
I believe Correa, deep down, would love to stay in Houston.
I agree with that.
If the Astros were to match any contract offer that Correa got, let's just assume that he signs a Seager deal, $325 for 10. Mm-hmm. If he came back to the Astros and said, this is what I've been offered from Team X, will you match that? Correa would love to re-sign with Houston.
He'd be having his fingers crossed.
But he's not going to give you the hometown discount. He's not going to give you $300 over 10 if he's offered $325 over 10. He wants to make every dime that he deserves to make, to be quite honest with you. I also don't feel like the Astros would be willing to go over the luxury tax. Jim Crane has done that, but he's done that at the deadline. He's never went over the luxury tax during the offseason. The Astros, if the luxury tax threshold stays at $210, the Astros only have $24 million to spend. Carlos Correa is not signing what would be a $24 million contract. So this would force Jim Crane to do something that he hasn't done before, and that's to go over the luxury tax in the offseason.
Well, you could get rid of Odorizzi at 8.
You could
make a few
nibbling
moves. Yeah, just to get – but, again, it doesn't leave you any wiggle room for all the other moves in season and otherwise you'd have to make.
Right, you'd have to get really creative, and it would be difficult to do. Now, I think that – you know, Click has it in his capabilities to do it. I don't believe that they're going to go that route, largely because I don't feel like they want to sign a contract over 5 years. Here's the one slim possibility that Carlos Correa could still be a Houston Astro. I believe that they are talking, too, because why wouldn't you?
Right.
That's just good business on both sides. Correa is not going to eliminate
a team. You don't want to sever ties. You want to leave amicably so that whether it's him or the agent for something in the future.
I totally believe they're still chatting. I'm also not naive to think that they're chatting in terms of having this long-term contract that'll sign, you know, sometime today or then after whenever the lockout ends, whatever the case may be. The only chance, and it's a very slim chance, but the only chance that the Astros can bring Carlos Correa back. We talked earlier about the CBA. The Major League Baseball Players Association wants the luxury tax threshold to go to 240. Major League Baseball wants it to go to 180. They're right now right in the middle. It's just negotiation tactics. But if it goes to 240, all of a sudden you're looking at $30 million more under the luxury tax. Astros would go from $24 million under the tax to $54 million under the tax. That's the only way that I could see a potential Carlos Correa re-signing
Crane,
with the Houston
Crane's
Astros.
Crane's done a really good job of soft-shoeing the whole egg on his face or cheap mantra that Tillman can't escape, that, you know, that Cal gets criticized for in the way they do business to some degree.
See, I don't think Cal gets like criticized for being cheap. He gets criticized for being stupid.
No, but I'm saying for other reasons, too, like the fact that they won't draft a certain character issue and all the things in the past.
It's not the money stuff. It's like the other stuff.
Yeah, he's done a good soft shoe in a lot of ways to kind of dance around the whole thing. I just don't get the feeling that He's just such a shrewd businessman in all of his real business dealings as well as since he's owned the team. I don't think it comes down to the tax as much as he realizes that winning has a value to it, right? And the fact that the one thing he's not going to do is make that knee-jerk emotional decision in the short term that affects him for the long term. The fact that this team has been successful as long as it has, and we've joked about the ring nights and all the other ways, but it's made him extra money because of it, right? And they haven't won but one World Series. But the fact that they're competitive, they're a playoff team, they give people hope, people spend money, they get more tickets revenues, they get more merchandise, they get all those different things. I think he realizes with Yordan coming down the pike, with Kyle Tucker coming down the pike, with his ability to get those guys locked up and make sure that he has even more longevity. Bregman's still, you know, expected to be in the good years of his career, the heyday of his career, this prime years. You hope so.
He thinks so
on Twitter yesterday. You still got Altuve with some good years left. And he realizes that as much as he'd love to have this franchise player that's been, you know, drafted and raised within the system, a part of his club, he's not going to do anything. And I think that's the major thing. Not just this year and what the cap number is going to be. It's just from the standpoint of still being able to stay relevant in the long term that he's not willing to risk that, because that's what this kind of deal for those kind of years would do.
Yeah, it's bad business. Yep. And Crane's not in the business of bad business, and Click has shown us he's not really in the business of bad business, especially from his days learning under, you know, Tampa Bay's regime, whenever they're kind of they're penny pinchers a little bit out there in Tampa Bay, and they trade dudes before they even enter free agency. Like, if Tampa Bay I always get Click and Crane off the tip of my tongue, but if Click wanted to go to the Tampa Bay route, he would have actually traded Correa before he even had free agency.
And look, Oakland's done it too. Tampa's just done it better.
Yeah.
But those are two Moneyball instances where that's how they try and do business. And let me throw something else at you before we get off the topic. I think the other thing that would have made more sense in saying Correa might have the ties to want to stay, if they don't win it in 17, if this is a team that's been on the cusp for a long run but still haven't gotten to the mountaintop, and he knows that that team still exists in that locker room, and that no matter where else he goes, it's probably his best chance to win. And because he wants to see it through, that might have had an influence on Correa to have a little bit extra in the terms of I want to stay mode. But because they've at least won one, and they still have had the run, and this is his only, maybe the only chance of his career to completely cash in, that's why he's going to go.
Yeah, dollars and versus winning always weigh differently on players, right? Like, Correa strikes you as a player who enjoys to win, and the fact that he does already have that championship ring,
that's
cash in, right? Once you already have the ring, you've already won in your lifetime, cash in.
But also from a player's perspective, when they appreciate the history, and in their minds they believe they're trying to be a Hall of Famer someday.
Which Correa, I'm sure, is.
Right, and one of the things that always you look at as a resume, did he ever win one? He already has won one. If he hadn't, and the Tigers and all these other teams might be out of the equation so that he could stick with a team that could put him in the equation at the end of his career.
A little housekeeping that the Astros announced tendering contracts to all of their 6 arbitration-eligible players. Now, you can tender them a contract, which tendering them a contract guarantees that they'll be under your club control for the following season. You can also not tender them a contract, which grants them free agency in the coming year. They elected to grant all of them a contract, tendered all 6 of them, Aledmys Diaz, Josh James, Phil Maton, Rafael Montero, Ryan Stanek, and Framber Valdez. Why the grunt with Josh James?
Because he should already be gone.
I mean, he's going to be cheap. He's going to be less than $1 million, and you don't
he
even have to have him on the Major League roster.
How many chances does the guy get? How many lives before you get to 9 do you say, Josh James, look, you know what? You can have all the talent in the world, but if you can't put it together between the years and on the mound, at a certain point, maybe a fresh start somewhere else is your best opportunity. And if you think you can trade him and get something back in return, then go for it. I just think that's one guy that I would – look, they outrighted scrubbed Sugarland, and no one lost any sleep over it. If you'd have done the same thing with Josh James, some people might have applauded.
Josh James, way better arm than Andre Scrub. And I realize that Josh James isn't a very popular figure for, like, Houston Astro fans, but Josh James has had some flashes of being a solid relief pitcher. He's not going to be expensive. You don't have to have him on the Major League roster. The trading idea, that's not an option because he doesn't have much value, to your point. But why not? I mean, you're gonna need a bunch of arms over the course of the season. You have a cheap arm that, you know, still has life in that arm. Second
Jeremy,
year
every
off of
time
the injuries,
you put him out there,
the best year, so give him a shot.
Every time you give him a shot and he's come back from this and that and the other thing, the next thing you know, he's got a pitch that's served back at him that needs a stewardess on it because it's getting out of Minute Maid so freaking quick that it looks like an aircraft. He can't do wrong right the way he goes in and approaches his approach to pitching. He has an unbelievable arm. He has no idea what to do with it and how to pitch.
Maybe he'll put it all together this year. Look, I'm not saying that he needs
to be the Washington Nationals.
I'm not saying he needs to be the setup man for Ryan Pressly. He just gives you some insurance. Like, he's going to be in Sugarland all year, and if you need an emergency arm out of the bullpen, you bring him over. You drive him over the few miles to Minute Maid Park. He's a cheap arm. It's a cheap arm. You always need a bunch of arms in that, you know, in your organization. Why not? 713-780-ESPN. ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's get into the college football carousel and the craziness involved with it next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Wildcat Golf Club. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Broadcasting live from the Wildcat Golf Club, occasional invitational going on now. See what the winning score is a little bit later. So this college football coaching carousel has been outstanding if you like storylines and drama the last couple of days. Not great if you think.
You love it.
I do love it.
You're
a
drama
awesome.
Guy.
I am. That's why
I know.
My favorite daytime television, my favorite reality TV are sports. And I think you're getting a good dose of it right now.
You're a big Days of Our Lives guy.
Never been able to dive into the soap operas. I'll dabble in the reality TV, not the soap operas, though.
See, I never was until the athletic dorm in college. The Days of Our Lives, like, bandwagon was ridiculous. And you know how, like, in the dorms they have the viewing rooms with the big TVs? The football team would, like, make sure that in every one of those rooms, Days of Our Lives was on, and
that's
they knew
bizarre.
Everything that was going on with Victor Kyriakis and all these different characters. I'm like, see, I can't do soap operas.
Right
yeah,
now.
I can't. Well, I'm just telling you what the way it was.
It's worse than chapstick. Anyway, Brian Kelly is worse than that. Brian Kelly's getting dragged right now for leaving Notre Dame when they had a possibility of getting to the college football playoff. One, it's a long shot that they would get to the college football playoff. But a lot of folks are like, oh, what are you doing? You're quitting on the kids. You shouldn't leave Notre Dame. You should have waited a little while. I completely disagree. Like, we need to get past the idea where college football is amateurism. It's absolutely not. College football coaches are getting paid more than NFL coaches. College athletes are soon to get paid millions of dollars, and some already are. The next 2 weeks, by the way, as far as college football coaching goes, are like some of the two biggest weeks coming up. The signing deadline coming up for the early signing day in college football is like 2 weeks away. So if I'm LSU and I'm signing Brian Kelly to be the next head coach and I expect Brian Kelly to give me national championships at some point, and I'm paying Brian Kelly three times as much as he's making at Notre Dame, I expect him to get his butt to Baton Rouge and start working for me right now. Darn the kids. So, like, any of this Brian Kelly, oh, he should have taken the high road. I couldn't disagree more. He's making three times more money going to Baton Rouge. Go work for that employer.
Look, the one thing that I've been harping on since we got into all this is it's a business, and the NCAA doesn't want you to believe it. That's why they hated the whole thought of the NIL and all these other things. But just the way that the one side, the parents of the kid that says you were going to be my kid's coach for 4 years. Well, what happens after two when the professional leagues came calling and said you were going to be an instant millionaire and you decided, hey, coach, thanks, but no thanks on all four, I'm out? Same way from a coach's perspective. You can call them, like I do, used car salesman. You can call them the untrustable, trustable force that, you know, is in charge of guiding our kids. But at the end of the day, it's a business for them too. And if money comes calling, it's like Correa or anybody else. When the bag is open, it's only going to stay open for so long. You may only get one chance. And if someone gives you that home run opportunity to be financially sound for the rest of your life and maybe several relatives' lifetimes, you have to jump on that chance. And you may hurt some feelings along the way, but at the end of the day, both sides do it. So it's hard to point fingers at one and not the other, or just say, look, it is what it is. It's not like it used to be when you say it's all about academics and an extension of school. It is big business, and it's financial gains, and that's what Brian Kelly did, just like that's what players do when they jump early.
Could Brian Kelly have talked to his team for more than 2 minutes whenever he met with them?
Sure,
could he
have
not texted them on the TeamWorks app to figure out that he was leaving Notre Dame? Yeah, he could have done all of that stuff. But whenever somebody else is paying you three times more than you are getting paid, and they expect you to win at a very high level, look, LSU fires coaches 2 years after they win national championships. They're paying you three times more than you were making at Notre Dame. You go to Baton Rouge as quickly as you can, and the next 2 weeks are critical in college football. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just where, oh, you can ease on to the job. No, the early signing date for the for recruits to sign with your institution, 2 weeks away. You can't stick
and
around.
You
got to go now.
Here's the other thing, Jeremy. It would be the worst-kept secret in all of sports because, you know what, for all these coaches that did all this time, put in all this time and effort to get all the recruits to go to the school that they were currently at, if they're leaving or even thinking about leaving, the first thing they're doing is they're picking up the phone, they're calling all the guys they talk to and saying, hey, don't sign anything or just hold tight, right? Because when I go, I'd like to take you with me, and here's the same opportunity, just a different set of uniforms. And so the word would first parent would say, well, we love the campus, and now we're hearing, and the word would get out, and everything would go haywire anyway. Lincoln Riley played it like a fiddle in the middle of a symphony orchestra. He played it exactly the way he wanted to play it. He set it up so all his major five stars and his major recruits are going to follow him out the door. And it wasn't about the campus and the environment. It was about where he was going to be, and that was going to be good enough for me. And that's what he did. And that's what they do. And that's what anybody that's naive enough to think that at the end of the day, like Brian Kelly, if you read the transcript or saw the video of the actual BS that he was delivering to these kids, and I still love you and all these other things. I mean, at the end of the day, come on, man. It's just, it's all a part of how your life is going to the next step and how much money you're going to have with you. And that's just, that's the bottom line.
Yeah, I have no problem with what Brian Kelly's doing. He's getting crushed right now for, you know, leaving before Notre Dame season's over. They have a chance, a slim chance.
There are people that believe that he could have just had the handshake and told LSU, I'm coming. But that for the benefit of the kids in this locker room and the chance for us to play in the playoff, I'm just going to keep it mum.
You can't do that. You're 2 weeks away from National Signing Day, the early period. You have to. I mean, the next 2 weeks are critical for the future of LSU. You got to go. Yep. You got to go now. Now, whenever you do leave, you see a lot of the stories that people had, you know, kind of stored inside. You see them start to surface. Like, there was a photographer who takes pictures for Notre Dame that, like, leaked a picture of Brian Kelly on the sideline flicking somebody off. That, to me, made him look like an LSU coach, to be honest with you. I thought it was kind of hilarious. But then Robert Saleh and Matt LaFleur, the story kicking up, they were grad assistants for Kelly whenever he was at Central Michigan. Brian Kelly invited Saleh and LaFleur to what they thought was a party. Yeah. They got there. Their assignment, basically to be the valets for the party as graduate assistants.
And they came dressed as if they were going to be invitees to the party. And then they were shoveling and they were valeting cars and good on them for saying that was the lesson learned in life, that I would never do this if I make it big. And now, aside from Kelly's new deal, they're both in bigger, more prominent positions to where they could be. Yeah. And when that story gets out, it's like, bro, and it's not the only time you've heard about this. I've heard a ton of stories that are negative on Kelly as opposed to Saleh and LaFleur and guys that learned to do it the right way and paid their dues.
Yeah, I've heard he's a jerk too, but sometimes jerks win. The question now becomes, well, who's Notre Dame's next coach going to be? Jack Swarbrick, the AD for Notre Dame, they said they'll be patient with their new guy.
It's about the right candidate. And when we find the person we think is the right one to lead this program and have the right conversations with him, that's all that matters. If that happens tomorrow or weeks from now, that's fine. This is about getting the right person.
That, to me, reads that Luke Fickell will be the next head coach at Notre Dame. Dennis Dodd tweeting, Notre Dame will apparently wait for Luke Fickell, the number one choice. Jack Swarbrick suggested he would not name an interim. Assistants being told to stay on the road. Strong Catholic ties with Fickell. Notre Dame wants renewed bond with the traditional Midwest Catholic high schools in recruiting. Luke Fickell's the guy for Notre Dame. He's going to be distracted on Saturday.
I hope you're right, and I know you have selfish reasons for thinking that, and I do too, and I hope you're absolutely right. But I think it's hard to have a university say, hey, stay on the road, do what you've been doing from a recruit. The recruit is his – recruiters were already coming out there saying, you dragged us under the bus. We were leaving kids' living rooms, convincing them to play for Notre Dame, and you didn't even give us the heads up you weren't going to be the coach. And it made us look silly. And now you're saying, hey, but stay out there. Do some more work for the Golden Domers. How many of those guys on his staff are going with him to LSU? I mean, come on, man. Let's be realistic about all of this. The one thing that I'm sure of is if Notre Dame wants to stay where they've been, and have that life cycle continue, they got to get a big name. They can't just hire the D coordinator. They can't just stay internal. And I think that for all the different coaches that have said no, or Iowa Campbell at Iowa State, or Fickell, or all these guys that have said, you know what, I'm really happy where I'm at. At the end of the day, there is that one job, or there's a few jobs that will always, like, as a coach, kind of tell you, this is a once-in-a-lifetime. I really got to think about this. And Notre Dame is exactly what that is. The whole prestige and the legacy of Notre Dame football, and to be one of the guys that could say on their resume, I was the head coach at Notre Dame, I think that means something, that has an impact. And for that reason, too, to keep that program going, you got to get a name.
I really believe it's going to be Fickell.
I think you're
Fickell
right.
A big enough name with what he's doing at Cincinnati, because it's not as sexy as some of the other names, but is it a big enough name, you think?
I think it is. I think it is because of the fact that it isn't just a one-and-done situation for the success he's had, that he's been able to take a program that's been less than some of the less-thans in terms of the big blue bloods of college football and stayed competitive for multiple years. I think that that's exactly why. And he's young, and he's a guy that I think would be very, very content when he got that job to stay there. And look, who'd have thought Brian Kelly would have survived 12 years? And for all the success that he had, with all the kind of the obstacles he had to get around with the academic requirements and everything else, the fact that it took him 12 years before he decided to pull a Chip Kelly and start seeing the greener pastures, I think Fickell would be the same kind of guy. Once he got to Notre Dame, I think he would just absolutely stay exactly where he is.
I believe Fickell will go to Notre Dame, and I think Marcus Freeman, the DC at Notre Dame, is actually going to end up at Cincinnati. As the head coach. I think it's going to be a little swap there. What's interesting, too, this Oklahoma job that is open. Matt Rhule's been heavily rumored, by the way, today on Twitter. Oklahoma needs to hit on this hire. Going to the SEC, like, is it completely out of the question where if they don't hit on their next head coach, that they can turn into like Arkansas in the SEC and
Absolutely.
Just kind of be a middle of the back, middle pack of the team, or middle of the pack team in the SEC?
Absolutely, because of the fact that what they're going into, the gauntlet of that conference alone, what they're going to be going into eventually, but the fact that, look, from the standpoint of trying to stick to the standards that has been set, that's why I firmly believe, and I might be completely wrong on this, I believe Stoops is coming back. I believe that Stoops
for good,
it's short term for a couple of years. I think he's going to bridge the gap, but I think he's going to bridge the gap and keep them competitive and do everything that he can to keep Oklahoma on the map until they make the big switch to the SEC, and maybe then they get their sights set on another big name that they can work on and land.
Huh.
But I think that Stoops took so much pride, and I witnessed this at Wisconsin. Barry Alvarez handpicked Bielema to be his next coach. And Bielema swore he'd be there forever, just like Alvarez wanted him to be and had groomed him to be. And then in the middle of the night, he jumped ship.
Yeah.
And I think that that's exactly why Stoops, who handpicked Lincoln Riley, is going to come back and go, okay, I got to make sure that my program stays on track. Therefore, I'm not only coaching the bowl game. Short term, I'm going to keep this team going in the right direction, and then I'll find the next guy to take over.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I think Rhule's going to get that job, but they better hit. They better hit on the job.
So you think he's going to leave?
I believe so, yeah. A lot of these college jobs are paying more than these NFL jobs.
Now they
are, control.
Yeah. This set a different precedent.
It's a much different job, too. Like, I think you can be successful in college, not successful in the NFL, and vice versa. I think Cliff Kingsbury is a perfect example of that. No interest in recruiting. Wasn't a great recruiter. You get into the NFL, where you can just worry about ball. Great coach. And then vice versa. You know, Matt Rhule, maybe a little better suited for the college game. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Culture, whatever with the Texans. How about meaningful steps in a real rebuild? What was the last Texans move that got you excited? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I'm going to tell you about Apollo Men's Health, because I believe in them, and I love the things that they do at Apollo Men's Health. You know what? Every day you're looking for energy. You're looking to live your best life, and sometimes you feel like your best days are behind you. Well, with Apollo Men's Health, they don't have to be. For both men and women, that starts with hormone therapy. They do it and have different ways to administer it so they can suit your lifestyle and your schedule and make sure you still have more energy than you had in the past. If you want to get on a workout program, it starts with a body composition analysis. It takes literally 60 seconds, but then it allows you to chart your progress on a week-to-week basis. You want to recover quicker because you're sore after going to the gym? Well, you get into HGH peptide therapy, and everything else that they have, it's all under one roof. Two locations to better serve you near downtown Houston. But each has everything from your smoothies to your proteins to your vitamins, supplements, and fat burners. They have it all for you. Dr. O and his staff, they know what they're doing. They do it on a daily basis. They do it better than anybody else. Start the process today. Go to ApolloMH.com. Book your first appointment. You'll find out that most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders, and then let the process go from there. They're going to ask you tough questions. If you give them honest answers, they're going to get your results. It's the good people doing great things at Apollo Men's Health.
Road ahead. Available at your local Advance Auto Parts and participating CarQuest stores.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Wildcat Golf Club. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Broadcasting live from Wildcat Golf Club, the occasional invitational, I think, starting to wind down a little bit. I think Granado's team's going to win. You're right, you shouldn't win your own tournament.
Nope.
That should not happen. Like, turning the wrong score in the inverse. Like, do it the wrong way. Let somebody else win. Talked a lot today about this Texans culture. Like, I'm kind of like the call we had earlier. I believe it was Gary, where he said, "Give me, what does culture even mean? Whenever you have players that aren't even going to be here in a few years." And I've had that same thought as well. Like, what does culture actually mean for, you know, a locker room that won't be here whenever you're starting to win either? And, like, they've been mocked and ridiculed for the culture. Like, I get the idea. I get the concept. Establish the standard. Establish the Texans way, much like the Patriots way. It's easy to mock, right? You bring in the Ingrams, the Amendolas, great locker room guys, but exactly who are they molding? Like, that's the question that I have. Like, are those dudes molding Lopez, who you expect to be here for a while? Like, are they molding Davis Mills, who might be a
Nico
backup
Collins.
Quarterback? Yeah, exactly. Like, what exactly are you trying to build with quote-unquote culture?
I mean, I think, again, winning is part of a culture. And I think that successful cultures that people credit and look to try and emulate are those that also involve winning. And so, to your point, until you get a team that's worthy of winning, then what do you have in terms of culture, and what good is it if you can be the best guys in the community? I mean, the trophy you get for being the top community service team in the NFL ain't quite the Lombardi trophy.
Right.
And to have them synonymous, I don't – it takes work, it takes years, it takes time, and it takes a lot of development and takes a plan. And to your point with when we were talking about it earlier, I just don't have any confidence in their plan.
No, I don't either. I really don't. And the plan to me isn't this year about even like starting forward on a rebuilding team. The plan was establishing their way, and their establishing their way has been mocked and ridiculed. The Score put out a story talking about every team's offseason regret, and they were not too kind to the Houston Texans.
Shock.
They said the Texans must regret not having a roster management plan. And, like, that's what we've been talking about. The plan hasn't been about roster management. It's been about what's in with the walls. What's the standard? What's the culture? What's the way? Why did they start the season with a handful of veteran running backs who are years removed from their primes? Why did they trade a pick for Anthony Miller just to release the wideout months later? And that it doesn't only end with Anthony Miller. Finley, the other offensive lineman dude that they traded for and they got rid of, or the corner, rather. It was a corner from Green Bay, I think. It feels like Houston's rebuild didn't take any steps forward in 2021. And Caserio, look, he didn't have a first, didn't have a second rounder. Like, the thing you're most encouraged about with this team, like, in terms from a rebuilding standpoint, is it Roy Lopez? Is it Nico Collins? Like, mid-round draft picks, late-round draft picks that, like, maybe could be starters for a good NFL team. Maybe.
But Jeremy, they're more, you know, I go back to from a standpoint of before you can build a brand new house, you got to tear it down to the studs, right? You got to tear it down to the foundation. But I don't think they have any studs in that locker room when they tear it down. They burnt it down. They burnt it down to the very rock bottom of all things because there's nothing that you can build around. For every Collins that you can build around or say is going to be a part of your culture, they're not going to be foundational pieces. You need your foundational pieces. You know you need a franchise quarterback at some point. You know you need a left tackle. You know you need the key.
Do you need a left tackle?
You do. Because, again,
you don't have two?
No.
You know what they say when you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one?
That's right.
When you have two left tackles, you don't have one?
We have, unless one can go right and be the right guy for the right side. I think that when you look at, and we've had this discussion as well, but with Laremy Tunsil, the biggest thing is by the time your team is good again, he's going to be over the hill. So your best bet is to get rid of him now. And, again, they're leery of being criticized for not getting for him now what they gave up to get him when they did. And you're never going to get that. Part of the rebuild is you've got to admit the fact that you're rebuilding, and you have to take it in the shorts a little bit.
I feel like you can't have that attitude with Laremy Tunsil. Like, I mean, to me, if Titus Howard's playing left tackle,
I can't, or the organization.
The organization. Like, you have to get the maximum yield for a player regardless of the maximum yield
that
you
gave. At that current point in time.
You totally overpaid. And it kind of segues perfectly into the next point I wanted to make. Because, like, when was we talk about winning games on the field. Texans aren't doing that. And that's fine. But if you were to win some of these moves, I think you could excite the fan base. Maybe not excite the fan base where there's 60,000 screaming Texan fans in NRG. I don't think you can excite the fan base where there's, you know, tailgate rows completely filled up again. But you can start gaining some positive momentum if you take a win from a PR perspective.
Get them to believe again.
You make a good roster
and motivate.
You make a good trade. Maybe you steal a first-round pick for Brandon Cooks at the November 2nd trade deadline. Something like that. Like, the Texans have been craving, Texan fans have been craving a good move that they could get excited for a long time. I can't think of the last time the Texans made a move where I was like, that is a good move. I'm really excited for that move for the Houston Texans.
I agree, because when you think about all the things that you just got done saying, and you think about what it takes in terms of a fan base to want to buy a ticket again, to want to buy a jersey, to want to be involved in
Cameron
all
Johnston.
In. There's no way in hell. And when you look at what they've done already, they've done more damage than they've done progress in any way, shape, or form to give anybody hope. And a lot of ways, we also said, too, there were the same people that said, I'm not doing anything with this team again until Bill O'Brien's gone. Mm-hmm. And then in walks Cal McNair. And by the way, he promotes Jack Easterby. So now you've got a carryover. When all you heard was, we want everything that had any association and everybody involved with Bill O'Brien to be out the door. But the one guy that was his right-hand man found a way to stick around. And now he's entrenched more so than ever before. And that's a bigger problem than people, I think, on the outside looking in realize. But it's also the number one most influential factor, both from a fan perspective and from a lot of free agents and agents' perspective, going forward with this franchise. And I don't think they're ever going to – this is the thing that really scares me, and that's why I don't think the fans have hope, because I don't think he's going anywhere.
No, I don't either. And, like, I'm literally trying to think of, like, while you're talking, of a move that the Texans made in recent memory that excited me. Like, I mean, down the dial, they might have loved the Danny Amendola move in the offseason, but, like, nothing that Nick Caserio did in free agency excites you. Nothing. Like, bringing in Mark Ingram, that doesn't excite you. Tyrod Taylor doesn't excite you. In fact, when they signed Tyrod Taylor, many people thought he'd be the backup quarterback to Deshaun Watson. Like, you want to go back
but that's
to
why I excited them. At the time, they thought
but can you
they
really
finally
get that
got
a backup
that could play the same way as their starter.
But I'm talking about, like, over the moon, like, pumped up, like, fired up about a trade. Like,
yeah,
you're not any backup
right?
quarterback that you sign. Like, it was like, could it be a shrewd backup signing, Tyrod Taylor backing up Deshaun? Sure, shrewd mood.
Right.
He's somebody that can go to it. Like, my definition of a good backup quarterback is whenever a quarterback has to miss 4 weeks, you go 2-2. Like, he's not going to burn down the building, right? He's going to be serviceable. He's going to keep it afloat. But if you go back to, like, the Bill O'Brien days, the Clowney trade certainly was the opposite of excitement. Like, Laremy Tunsil was the last time you made a trade where you got a good player in return, and maybe that excited some people because finally
because
you get a left tackle that
can
protect
up.
Deshaun Watson. But I think, like, smart minds, like, no, you gave up way too much.
Yeah.
Like, I don't
That's
feel like
why you couldn't
excited
get excited about it.
The last, like, exciting move that I think the Texans made as an organization was trading up for Deshaun Watson.
I was going to say drafting Deshaun Watson. So
yeah.
Same difference.
Because you're not going to get excited. You're not going to get excited about Davis Mills in the third round. Like, a lot of people were upset that they reached for a quarterback in the third round whenever they had tons of problems. You're not going to get excited about trading up in the fifth, trading up in the sixth. You're not going to get excited about any late round draft picks. You're not going to get excited about veteran free agents on a team that weren't going to be any good. Nothing that Bill O'Brien did as a general manager excited you. Like, I really think, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Houston, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When was the last time the Texans made a move that you got excited about? To me, it's Deshaun Watson. I really think it was Deshaun Watson.
I think you're right. I don't disagree with that. I think you're absolutely right. That's exactly the only thing that I could think of when you brought and you posted up. I'm with you 100%. I'm also with the fact that if you're looking to make a wager midweek or you're looking to do something gambling-wise, which you have a tendency to do.
I dabble.
I think MyBookie is the place that you should do it.
Why wouldn't it be?
Well, because I think – well, we're not friends yet, but I think that when you have friends
– how long is it going to take to
you
be
can get
friends?
Well, I mean, all we do is work.
Well, they won't allow us to go golf today on a beautiful day.
That's true.
I putted a little bit on the 15-stint putting green that was blowing everything by, but –
yeah, but I mean,
like to bust out the big boy, like to bust out the driver.
I'm going to leave that right there, and I'm going to hope that my man back in the studio does what he's supposed to do with
some
of those
things. Let the big dog eat. How about the Rockets tonight? They're on the road against Oklahoma City, looking to make it 4 wins in a row. Can they make it 4 wins or are they underdogs tonight in Oklahoma City? Maybe
they're
going
to win. I feel like they're
going to
win. You know why?
Because Jalen Green's not playing?
Yeah. I hate to say it. And you know what? Charlie's finally picking up what I've been putting down. I heard Charlie mention exactly what I've been saying for days with you guys, and that is this team is starting to get some chemistry. They're starting to believe in the process that Steven Silas is running, the system that they're putting forth, and the fact that they've got some wins under their belt, and the fact that Jalen Green still isn't playing means that, and they're playing the second worst team in the league. I think that they fully believe they're going to go into OKC and they're going to win, and they've got more momentum than OKC does, no matter what home court means. And I think they got a legit chance to win 4 in a row, and I think that's a great thing. Because with each game that they win right now, no matter how much the dog days of January and February catch up with them, It builds confidence in KPJ. It builds confidence in your younger players getting these minutes, capitalizing by doing some things to believe they can play in this league. You look at Matthews. You look at your boy Armani Brooks. You look at the guys
sweet
that have
shooting Armani Brooks.
Been able to step in and capitalize on their minutes. They're having fun right now. Yeah. They don't want to not have fun watching one guy go one-on-four isolation on the perimeter.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Ask the question, when was the last time the Texans made a move you were excited for? One text saying, firing Bill O'Brien. See, I thought about that, but the problem was whenever you fired Bill O'Brien, Jack Easterby still was the black cloud over it, right? He was still the disgusting shadow over the organization. 4564 going way back. Andrew saying, Manning and the Jonathan Joseph signing. That's way back. Like, that's... If there's a glory year for the Houston Texans, those were the glory years. Pedro saying whenever they signed the Honey Badger in free agency.
That was big.
And then Rich also saying when they fired Bill O'Brien. But again, that Easterby was
still
lingering.
See, that's the thing that I don't think anybody thought of at the time. Everybody thought when Bill went, all the negativity
maybe
went
you're
with
right.
it.
Maybe you're right.
And at the time, they didn't realize what we didn't realize, which is how much power Easterby really had and was going to continue to get.
Yeah. See, that could be it, that we didn't really know what kind of shadow was looming quite yet with Easterby hanging around after the Bill O'Brien firing. 713-780-ESPN. Coming up next, the 12 days of Christmas for the Houston Texans. 12 days of Texans Christmas. What will the Will House? What will be the first thing on their wish list? That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, like I was saying, if you guys want to get involved and put some money down, you've got friends, you guys all watch sports, you guys all talk about it all day, you listen to us, there's an opportunity for you to get them involved in what you've been doing that you know all along from listening to us. That's get them involved with MyBookie. And if you go to MyBookie.ag right now and you've got an account and you start inviting your friends by hitting that refer your friends button, you can capitalize as well because you can get a 250% referral bonus up to $250 when you start getting your friends involved and they make their first deposit. It's really simple, and all you've got to do is just get them the information to contact your friends. And whether they do it via text message or email or on social media, once they get the message, if they sign up and they make a deposit, you capitalize and you've got more money to play with in your account. It's the gift that keeps on giving, and it's unlimited. You can get as many friends as you want involved, and they can all be a part of MyBookie while they make the most uninteresting games more interesting by being able to bet on them. Refer your friends, 250% referral bonus, up to $250, and place bets on all the sports, and they have all the lines. On all the games, prop bets, and in-game betting to keep the most uninteresting game more interesting, you can find it all at mybookie.ag. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.
This is Ed Tuttle Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Wildcat Golf Club. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Broadcasting live from the Wildcat Golf Club, coming up at the top of the hour, the Will House. Two-man show tonight. Jake Asman, Cody Stutes will take you home. Yeah, yeah, two-man show.
Where's the king?
The king?
BK.
He's the king?
Burger King.
That's a terrible joke.
Better.
Thank
that's
you.
Better.
Thank
I thought you.
I
thought you.
I don't worry about him.
I thought
get
you were trying
me.
To
that's
say that like he was like the king of the show, and I was going to take offense to that.
I would
like,
never
that's a one
do
of
that.
His, maybe like the Duke of
don't
the show.
Do that.
Maybe that's what he is. You know. You know.
I just I don't know where to go from there. I really don't.
I can't get over that you've sat here with a golf club in your hand the whole time.
Yeah, I know.
Spin it around, swinging it, like jangling it, like making points. Pounding it. I'm like, dude,
remember
you're
Chi-Chi
dangerous
Rodriguez?
With that thing, and it's not on the golf course.
You ought to bring that thing in studio and make your points.
No, shut your mouth.
I think, you know, actually, I was thinking about bringing a baseball bat. Honestly, I was.
Why?
I feel comfortable. I don't know.
You feel comfortable holding
it? I had a buddy of mine that did sports radio in the Twin Cities that I worked with that did a show every day with a bat.
See, I think I'm going to do that. I
Why?
Think it's going to be my thing. It's going to be my shtick.
Literally, twirled it around, swung it in the studio.
Yeah.
Like, couldn't
stay.
Like, literally, make better in points? The studio, they had to give him a Sennheiser headset and microphone combo because he wanted to walk around the studio while swinging the bat and doing all these things. And
was he a baseball player?
No, he sucked.
Okay.
I know somebody
couldn't
that
even play softball.
I mean, I know somebody does that with a football, so why can't I do it with a baseball bat?
You are a just. You were something else.
Drink some good milk,
That's
too.
Probably true. We started the 12 days of Texans Christmas today. All the things we hope and wish Santa will bring the Houston Texans organization.
You guys could have been like 3 days into Christmas, Hanukkah for the Texans, but Nope, you decided to go with Christmas.
Wrong show, I guess.
Yeah. You guys could do that.
We'll do the Hanukkah stuff.
Yeah, you're outnumbered. You could do that on your show to capitalize on our show.
Sure.
That's not a bad idea from 3 to 7.
We're already a few days in, so we got some catching up to do.
Yeah, we started in December because I'm a bit of a Grinch and say you shouldn't start Christmas until December anyways. But our first wish for the 12 days of Texans Christmas is that the Texans get a franchise quarterback. What is yours, Cody Stoots?
Well, I mean, if we're just, like, magically waving our hands and they end up with a
Santa,
franchise
maybe.
Quarterback, like, that's pretty great. I just don't know that any of that's coming pretty soon.
Now, I heard you the other day talk about this with the draft experiment that y'all did.
Mm-hmm.
You had the Texans drafting a quarterback in the first round.
Right, with an additional selection that they had via Deshaun Watson trade.
Right.
So, if you're going to go quarterback in the first round, if you only have one first-round pick, I don't believe there's going to be a quarterback sitting there at one or two.
Right.
We believe they're going to end up probably as two. I don't believe there's going to be a quarterback at two that you're going to feel super confident making him the franchise quarterback. But if you have additional first-round picks, I'm fine with taking a swing.
I'm with you. I'm with you there. We're not going to let Joel talk this segment. Here's
it was just like yesterday. It's fine. You guys go ahead and do your thing. I'll be here when you need me.
I can see Joel working himself up over there. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Fine, I will.
Me and Tiger Assman are going to go out onto the putting green.
Oh, that's not a bad idea. I would be actually a little bit upset. Like, if the Texans don't get an additional first-round draft pick, which I think that they will, whether it's either trading down from a top-three pick or trading Deshaun Watson, I'm cool with the Texans using a second first-rounder on a quarterback. I don't want them using their first-rounder on a quarterback.
Dane Brugler had his first mock draft, and I really like Dane and what he does from a draft coverage standpoint. He had a quarterback coming off the board at 10. That was the first quarterback coming off the board.
Which one was it?
Kenny Pickett to Carolina.
Interesting.
He didn't have another quarterback.
That's why I said all along they've got to be smart in the fact that their best move, which even if they still want a quarterback, would be to gain assets, as many as they possibly can, by trading down. If Caserio didn't learn anything in his time with Bill Belichick, at least take the one thing that he does well, which is he trades back, still gets the players that they want, but gets additional assets that are going to help the team to construct a new roster.
It's really dependent on where those other Watson picks come from, because if you end up with two top 10 picks, you can make a solid argument, I'm going to use my own pick at two, get a defensive lineman, and then I'll just continue to stack assets going here. But at the same time, too, you have to think about this. You're going to have assets from the Deshaun Watson trade, which are going to be numerous. You've already got a couple of additional picks here or there from from other trades and other things that you've made, like insignificant rounds, not like late rounds. Like, I think they have an extra fourth coming up in this year. Like, at some point, you don't want to have a tremendous amount of rookie talent, but we've also seen Caserio in the one draft maneuver forward for a player that he really likes in Nico Collins.
Yeah, and I think that the other thing, too, the caveat to the 12 days of Christmas, too, is Brendan was great about saying you want to get a franchise quarterback, but is that by trading Deshaun Watson, too? Because I would say that, and argue without ruining all 12 days, but I would say that I would like to know and have clarity, if getting a franchise quarterback doesn't involve what you get for Deshaun Watson, then one of the days has to be that you find a home for Deshaun Watson where he wants to play, where you get the most that you could possibly get in return.
Do you have to have a legal settlement or closure on the legal scene before you can get maximum return for Deshaun Watson?
Maximum?
Yes.
No, because there were clearly teams ready to make the trade here.
Maximum.
You can increase the amount if it's settled. And that's what Caserio tried to do, seemingly.
Key word, though, is maximum.
Yeah.
You can still get a haul, but to get maximum value, you have to have that settled.
I don't think settling the legal situation turns like three firsts into four firsts. Like, I think you're really just adding a very small piece to the puzzle. Like, I think really what they talked about with the Dolphins is really what the center of what the deal is going to look like. It's going to be three first-round picks and some additional draft picks, some sweeteners. Yeah. It's like, if the legal settlement's only getting you, like, an additional second-round pick, don't you kind of want to just get it done and start working on it?
Just do it.
But again, because you want the keyword maximize, you want to take out the fact that there's going to be caveats that if it's not resolved, that it could go down. Instead of getting three firsts, you could get two firsts and a third, or, you know, and devalued by based on. As long as they're all civil, and as long as the league gives you what the ramifications are going to be because they're all civil and how many there are, then they don't have to be completely resolved. But unless they are, you're not going to maximize what you get back for them.
Well, you get into a very precarious position when you talk about the perception of Deshaun Watson. Like, there were seemingly some teams that were ready to just have the press conference say, we believe Deshaun Watson, we don't believe them, and he's our quarterback, let's go. But with depositions starting here very soon, both from his side questioning the women, and eventually the women's side questioning him. Some of that stuff starts leaking out, and all of a sudden the perception gets a lot tougher for the owners and the general manager.
That is the buyer. No.
Yeah, it becomes a lot tougher to stand up there for the press conference and talk about, he had the legal stuff, but, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal. You know, some of these details that could come out could be really, really bad as Jeremy hits himself in the head with his golf club.
It won't be the last because he's twirling the thing like a baton.
Just firing myself up. Hutchinson or Thibodeau?
I mean, I don't think there's a wrong answer. If I had my choice.
You think they're both going to succeed at the next level?
I do.
I do, okay. Too. I like Thibodeau slightly more.
Thibodeau has a higher pressure rate. You saw me tweet about this. I saw your favorite, the tweet.
I like that. I hadn't seen that before.
Pressure rate is indicative of future pass rushing success more than sacks. You can run into sacks. Like you can have a negative play and still end up with a sack, and people think, oh, well, they get sacks. Pressure rate is indicative of future success.
I like the way you said that.
And so Thibodeau has the highest pressure rate in college football per snap. Now, here's the thing. He's been banged up this year. Wolverine Watt is what I like to call Aiden Hutchinson. He was banged up last year, so both these guys have a slight injury history, but I think they're both going to be pretty darn good.
And it's also how you determine effectiveness. It could be sacks and pressures. It could be just the fact that from every down balance and what you bring to the table, you're an anchor for a defensive line.
Sure.
I think both guys are going to do it. They might just do it different ways.
Well, and you got to think, too, Detroit's going to make a decision before you
that
takes the other guy out of your hands. So it's not like you have to pick between the two. Like you're really just picking what Detroit doesn't pick.
Yeah, it would have to take something like where a quarterback falls in love or a team falls in love with a quarterback, they trade up for Detroit and something like that, where Corral goes number one. It's like a complete shock, complete surprise. What do you guys have coming up?
Buster Olney at 4:30. Nice. We'll talk a lot with him about the Astros situation, what's going forward, Major League Baseball's labor situation, when can that get settled, how does that affect Carlos Correa, so many different things. We're locked and loaded.
That's awesome.
That sounds very good. Cody Stoops joining us. He'll be on with Jake Asbin from right here inside the Wildcat Golf Club. All the teams will be coming in here pretty soon. You guys will get to look at the leaderboard as they come in. If Granado wins the thing, that's a darn shame. Granado should not win his occasional invitational. Absolute
you're just pushing all the wrong buttons in your first year.
Am
first
I?
You
Is
were
that
demanding
a wrong
playing
button?
In the tournament when you don't realize we cater to John.
I was
and
hopeful.
Now you're chastising John's ability to win his own tournament.
Yeah.
You're just not setting a good track record for yourself here in the early stages of Gal Media.
Well, I've told you before that John Granado is my hero and I want to be him someday. Did you see the Astros?
You can have a duck tail in back too.
What?
He's got that ducktail going up hair and back now.
Oh, you should have seen me during COVID. I mean, I looked like Lena Hidalgo with the hair that I had going on.
Who says
on.
You
it was
don't
outstanding.
Still?
It was, I'll show you.
Who
I'll
says
show
you still don't?
I'll show you side by side.
Get the lipstick back out. You're on your way there. We started the show with it. We can end it.
The side by side is scary. How close I looked like Lena Hidalgo. Almost went as her for Halloween. Astros made a hire today. New director of player development, Sarah Goldrum, who was a hitting instructor for the Milwaukee Brewers. I like this move for the Houston Astros. I think you get a very wise mind. I feel like a lot of times.
You've been in the cage with Sarah?
No, okay. I have not. Not in the turtle, as they call it. Okay. The turtle sometimes is called the cage. A lot of times.
Taking live BP with her?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm just asking. You like the hire. I'm just wondering if you have personal experience with her techniques in the box.
I don't get the innuendo of live.
There's not even innuendo. I'm talking about the batters. I'm talking about she's a hitting instructor.
Not anymore. Now she's a director of player development.
Okay, but you had to know her resume or what she brings to the table, why you like the hire as a hitting instructor.
Because I feel like she's a sharp mind. It's hard for women to break through sports, and once they do, you're getting the 1% of elite women minds who I think are equal to men, whereas you have men that are overrunning a sport. I always feel like that's a good hire. So I feel like the Astros hit it out of the park with Sarah Goldrum.
Do you like the Lifetime Network?
What does that have anything to do with that?
I mean, I just think that...
This is not a good look for you in the last 60 seconds.
It's not.
It's not.
Yes, it is. Look, you know,
I don't think so.
And by the way, she knows how to leave the job at the job site, too. She doesn't believe in a bat in the studio.
All right, it's going to do it for us. Thanks to Brendan Riley for doing all the hard work. Tyler Scott, Aaron Rabel, tag team, and is our onside engineer. He's Joel. I'm Jeremy. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.